You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
And it's that time once again, installment number 76. That's right, we're barreling towards number 100 here at the Church of the Lampshade. Glad the congregation is back together once again. And as always, hopefully we're going to have a great thought-provoking, entertaining. We tried to do it all here. Entertaining, fun, thought-provoking, insightful. We're going to have a really fun Christian-specific message. Later on in the show, a lot of people who aren't even Christian believers have told me they like, hey, I'm not into the whole Christianity thing, not going to buy into it. But I love the Christian specific segment. It's just fun here at the Church of Lampshade. It's a good time all the way around. If you're new here, you're going to love it. If you're a return member of the congregation, as always, good to see you here. And as always, we like to start off talking about those financially, those who aren't shy and pay those tithes to support the Church of Lampshade show. We have 5 supporters this week, including 2 Bitcoin Anons. And like I say, it's always very much appreciated. It really is the moral support, if nothing else, just the morale boost is a great thing. And like I say, we always like to get started off with the listener supporter mailbag. If you want to be a part of that, that information's at the bottom of the page. We've got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you've got another weirdo cryptocurrency, and some people do, I get emails. Drop me an email for that. I'll try to get you an address for that. I have people drop me emails on a regular basis. Hey, I've got this weirdo cryptocurrency. Can I offload it to you? Yes, more than likely you can. So just give me a holler. I'll do my best to get you an address for that. Like I say, we like to roll off in the listener supporter mailbag. Jackie, Grandpa Lampshade, I see your state is under the same mask terror mandate as my state. This has been the shittiest year ever. And if it weren't for the Church of the Lampshade and other podcast channels, I would be deep in the pit of despair. Please keep up the good work. For some of us, it really is a lifeline keeping us on the side of sanity. Hope all is well. You're enjoying the summer in spite of the collapse of Western civilization. All the best until next time, Jackie. Much appreciated. And, you know, really, it's we can kind of chuckle about it, and that's good. We need to be able to laugh about these things because we need to keep our sanity. Because people you look around, people are getting unwound. People are just going off. You see people going off. You read stories about people snapping and going off over stuff, and you're like, it seems like little stuff, but there's just such a tension psychologically for the people as a whole. And it really is important to sit around and understand that there's other people who aren't going, you're not crazy. It's the society that's going crazy. And there's other people who understand that as well. There's other people out there who get it, you know, who are trying to hold on to sanity. And this is one of the great things, I think, where truth, and that's why we try to make truth the center of the show, because truth will keep you anchored to sanity. You know, because I mean, you know, if the whole society around you is collapsing, which it is, and going insane, then, you know, you can start feeling, it's real easy to start feeling like maybe you're the one that's going crazy. Maybe you're the one that's lost touch with reality. You look around, everybody's wearing their cut muzzles and being obedient, and you're the one person that walks around without it. You know, you feel it is, and this is part of the reason they do it, by the way. You know, it makes you feel socially ostracized. You know, we're just programmed as people, you know, to want to belong to the society as a whole, to want to be a part of the group. And you know, as much of a lone wolf as you may or may not be, that's kind of ingrained in our DNA. It is ingrained in our DNA. We're social creatures. We want to be a part of the group. We want to be a part of society. That's why we form societies, why we form communities. And when you're a part of the community and you walk around and 90% of the people in the community are walking around with these weird muscles on their face and you're the one person not, it has the psychological effect on you of making you feel that you don't belong. You are the odd one out. You aren't conforming. You're not being a part of the group. What's wrong with you? And you can't help but have a feeling deep down inside that, you know, you are being counterproductive to the group. You know, again, we're just programmed to contribute. We're programmed to contribute to the larger whole, to the community, to our group, to our kin, to our families, you know, and our extended families, which, you know, is our society. And when you're all of a sudden look like you're the odd one out, that you're ostracized, it will have an effect on your subconscious, and it will. You feel like, well, why am I not being a part of? I'm looking around and everybody in my society, but in my community, you know, that I'm seeing, like 90% of these people are walking around with these goofy things strapped to their head. Maybe I'm the crazy one. You know, so that's why it's, again, truth will keep you on the rails. Truth will keep you sane. We have to continue to stay anchored in truth. Now here, you know, you see, it just kind of depends on where you're at and the demographic of the people around you as far as who's wearing the mask. You know, I mean, you still see quite a few people refuse to wear them, but then you see a lot of people going along with it. They strap them on and they, you know, and the ones that aren't, I mean, they really give you sideways looks because you're not, you know, and you look at the messaging. I saw some obvious messaging about this the other day on a quote unquote news story. And, you know, they were basically going on about how you are selfish and basically an evil person. Out and out basically called you an evil person if you don't wear the mask because you are endangering others. See, now it's not even about keeping yourself safe. Now, if you don't wear the mask, I read a whole story here a while back about if you don't wear a mask, you're probably a psychopath. You probably have psychopathic and narcissistic tendencies. You see, because you're selfish. You're putting other people at risk from a respiratory virus. You are an evil person. And see, they demonize you with this. You know, this is a demonization. You are a bad thinker. You are being labeled. And this is just as helpful as the people to the mass psychological programming that I think we're seeing taking place here as the people that go along with it. You are a bad person. You are putting other people at risk. I saw a story where somebody supposedly died from this thing. Look, I'm not saying people don't get sick and die from it. We try to stay grounded in truth. But when the media presents something to me, we're at the point that I am assuming they're just making it up. Really, I've never been one to go down the conspiracy theory road to the point of, you know, every event that takes place as crisis actors. But, I mean, the media has been caught out so many times just out and out lying and making shit up. I remember way back in the day when I think it was NBC. I think it was like the early Dateline program, and they did a big story, and I watched the story at the time that it aired, in these Chevrolet pickups with these fuel tanks on the outside of the frame rail. If they're hitting a side collision, they will burst into flames. And then they gave a demonstration. They put some Chevrolet pickups out there, and they had a vehicle run down and smash into it. And sure enough, just like they told us in the story, it blew up. And they're like, oh, my gosh. And they showed this thing burning. And you're like, wow. You know, the viewer comes away going, oh, my gosh. How terrible. GM's trying to kill everybody. And then turns out somebody went and dug the vehicles they used out of the wrecking yard and come to find out they'd put igniters in the tank to make it blow up. And when they got caught on it, they said, oh, well, we were just doing that as a demonstration of what could happen. We weren't saying that. We weren't trying to present that as, you know, an actual like experiment. No, bullshit. I saw the show. And that's exactly what they did. So, I mean, they've been caught out lying so many times that, you know, when they say, oh, well, we're interviewing this person over the internet and they're fill in the blank, brother, sister, mother, father, daughter, whatever. died of the coronavirus. I mean, my first assumption is, no, they didn't. This is just some, they're just making it up. This is somebody they know, and they got them to sit down and make these claims. But I mean, again, we know people do get sick from it, and people, especially people that are older, people have underlying health conditions, are more susceptible to this thing becoming something serious. I'm not going to sit here and say it doesn't exist at all. I don't think anybody's actually saying that. But anyway, they did a study. Get back on track. This is a story, and they're interviewing somebody, and the person they're interviewing says, I just, you know, they're like, is there anything you would like to say to people who aren't taking this seriously? And their response, and this was kind of what raised a red flag for me, was, yes, I would say that if you're not wearing a mask, you're selfish and you're horrible, and you need to stop doing that because you could be killing other people, was basically what they said. You would be killing other people. And it's an over, it's basically like, an, you know, again, a message that you're unhuman. You don't care about other people at all. So why should we care about what happens to you? Why should we care if your rights are trampled on? Why should we care, you know, if they, you know, if you're cracked down, put in jail or worse? After all, you're going around not wearing a mask. You could be killing people. It's all part of the program. We are seeing the largest mask psychological programming in the history of the world. I absolutely 100% believe that. And yeah, it's fun times. Let's rock on, Mr. T. Hope this tithe helps you and yours. Very much does. Appreciate it. As to the other, I'll be dropping you an email on that. Didn't want to discuss it on the show, but I will drop you an email. In fact, you'll probably have that by the time the show airs. Get into that. Fun journeys of the lampshade. Fun Journeys of the Lampshade. Coming up next from Debbie. The world is crazy. A woman walked by me and ripped off her face mask and said, you're not a lemming. And I'm not going to be a lemming either. We talked and it was fun. Walmart's going to try to force everybody to wear masks. I don't know. I don't wear masks. I really need to breathe. Love the shows. Keep up the great work. I look forward to your shows every week. You're in my prayers. Very much appreciated. Need all the help I can get. And your prayers and thoughts are very much appreciated. And again, yes, this whole, you know, it is a mask psychological experiment that we're seeing take place. And, you know, like I've stated before, if you get to the point where you're going to, you know, I mean, it's probably going to get to the point to where you just, you have to go in somewhere. And you, to do that, you're going to have to wear a mask. And as I've stated before, my recommendation is to make as big a mockery of it as you can. I've yet to have had to don my full on Hezbollah headgear mask, but I'm ready. I'm ready just in case as it is now. I've still just walk out and go somewhere else down the road that isn't going to try to play mask enforcement. So, you know, I've refused. I'm just not. And again, it's not like I'm going to have problems breathing or anything such as that. It's just I recognize what it is and I refuse to submit to it. I refuse to conform to it. This isn't about public safety. They have absolutely no data to back up some notion that this is about public safety. And we know that they're going on and on about more new cases because they're testing everybody, and everybody at this point has been exposed to it. They're no longer talking about death numbers. And let's see, wait, your death numbers are this, but now you're saying we have all these new cases. So really, when you were telling us that some ridiculous amount percentage of people are going to die from this, that was a big lie. Everybody's been exposed to this and your death numbers are, yeah, a fraction of a percent. They're not doing that. So we know they're lying. This is a mass program. I refuse to go along with it. I refuse to submit. I refuse to be, as you put here, a lemming. I refuse to go along with it. And yeah, you know, but it's going, we're going to get into this a little bit as far as one of the things I think is coming next, because they're going to stop. And yeah, in fact, that's our last letter to go through. So we'll just go ahead and seg right into that. And again, appreciate all listener support. Yeah, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. It's just, the morale boost is great. So yeah, now we know this isn't going to stop. I mean, we've had the lockdown. They're gearing up for another lockdown, and they're projecting where they're going with this. If you pay attention, they're projecting where they're going with this. They're already saying things like it's never going to end. This is the new normal for you. They're telling you that they're going to keep you under their thumb like this. They're saying that this is an indefinite thing. Well, it's not surprising when you hand people power, they don't generally turn around and give it back. They want more. It's like the ultimate opiate, the ultimate addictive drug. They want more power. They want more, more, more. They don't give it back, especially these people. They're projecting this. They're warming up this vaccine. The vaccine, miraculously going to have a vaccine like that. But they're saying you may have to be injected several times. Of course, I'm sure they're not going to be giving those out for free. Anybody have any idea what's in this thing that they miraculously just whipped out? They haven't been able to come out with a vaccine. You understand, vaccines for a virus are virtually impossible to create. They're very difficult, if not impossible, to create. This is why we've never had a vaccine against the common cold, because it just continues to change. You know, and that's the nature of viruses. They mutate and they change. And, you know, if the common cold stayed the same virus, it would be eliminated. Everybody would get immunity to it. You'd never catch it again. Or they could make a vaccine and expose you to it, and boom, you would never have it again. It would be eradicated. But they don't. They've never bothered, because they've admitted it's virtually impossible, because it changes enough all every season. Even the flu. You look at the flu and the flu shot. Everybody run out every year, get your flu shot. And it doesn't. It's ineffective. I read a deal back way before this insanity started, and I read a little nugget of truth I'd found somewhere. And doctor said, well, yeah, the flu shots don't work because there's like all these hundreds of different known strains of the flu, and we never know which strain is going to be going around next year. So we just guess, and we put about, you know, we only put like three in there. We put like three that we think one of these will probably be what's going around. But most of the time it isn't, because there's all these others that could be the prominent flu going around that year, and you're not vaccinated against it. These people go out and get their flu shots. And it amazes me that people don't get like a red flag going out when they have these things. You come in, free flu shots. And well, there is nothing free in America. Everybody, there ain't no such thing as anything free in America. But you'll see these things, free flu shots. Well, somebody's paying for it, or they're getting something out of it. Hey, there's a notion that anything in America is going to be free. That's just utter insanity. I can't tell you. I can tell you at some point, I do remember many, many years ago getting the flu shot. I haven't had one in so long. I don't know. I mean, we're talking decades here. But, you know, more people, I have these people that you know IRL, and they're like, I get a flu shot every year. Oh, hey, where are you at? What's going on? I'm sick with the flu. How are you doing? I'm fine. I'm rocking. Doing good. Not saying I never get sick, but I don't know. It's like, oh my gosh, the only people I know IRL who get the flu every year are those who don't get the flu shot, and everybody knows it's bullshit, yet they promote it. But yet somehow miraculously with this COVID virus, they've boom, in a matter of months, the government has ordered hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions, I don't remember, of doses of this vaccine. They're warming up, shoots full, and they're letting you know that they may have to do this. They may have to give you multiple injections. Pfizer is rubbing their hands. The hand rubbing is intensified because there ain't going to be no free. I mean, they may not charge you personally. They may say, oh, it's a free COVID shot. Somebody's paying for it. Somebody's getting richer. It's amazing. You have these corporations, these handful of billionaires, and they seem to be doing pretty good through this whole lockdown. Everybody else, not so much. Not so much. But anyway, where I was originally going with this is the projection. What's next? Because we know they're not going to stop. We know that there is no such thing as, well, that's good enough. They're already, they're holding the threat of further lockdown. We haven't been unlocked down when you think about it. I mean, think about it. They did this lockdown. And now, restaurants are supposedly like, I don't know, they're like, I think here they're supposed to be at 50%. You've got they're allowing people to go to work if you still have a job, you know, but it's not really, I mean, we are not where we were a year ago. I mean, we still, compared to where you were a year ago, think about it, just a year ago, not exactly ancient history, and what you were allowed to do without a hassle compared to where you are now. And yet everybody acts like, oh my gosh, we had to hold on to what we have. They could shut everything down again. They could order everybody to stay at home again. Everybody's running around complying in any way they can because they're saying, if you don't, we're going to have to lock it down again and order everybody to stay at home again. In which case, no doubt, they will narrow the list of what counts as essential personnel. And all of a sudden, that list will be a little smaller. You're going to be ordered to stay at home. Don't know how you're going to make a living not working, but hey, that's a you problem. We have a doom virus here to deal with, so you have to be locked in your house. They're threatening with that. They're holding that over the people's heads, and everybody's scrambling. Do what you can. I've seen people literally say, wear the mask. If you don't, we could be facing another lockdown again. I've seen people in authority say the same thing. If you don't wear the mask, if you don't comply and wear the mask and social distance, we could just be forced. We could just be forced to lock you down again. It's degrading. I get this picture of a rapist saying, look, if you don't take your panties off, I'm going to be forced. You're going to force me to punch you in the face some more. Now, this sounds extreme, and I'm not trying to be, gross here or anything, but really, this is what pops into my mind. They said, if you don't wear the mask, if you don't comply, don't do what I tell you to. We're going to be forced to make you suffer some more. Lock you in your house and demand that you can't go to your job. You can't make a living. Punch you in the face some more. You're the one forcing me to do it. I don't want to. I'm trying to watch out for your own good. I don't want to punch you in the face. Those panties got to come off. It's like we're being raped as a society. And everybody is doing what they can to comply. But they're not going to end with this. We know they're not going to end. So where are they going next? Well, nobody knows. Nobody has a crystal ball. But I've got a few ideas. And I believe what we're going to discuss here now is where they're going eventually. It may not be the next step, but I see it coming down the road. And that is this long thing that this thing has been talked about for some time in certain circles. And that is the notion of a cashless society. You see, you're going to be spreading the COVID by handling money. I've even actually heard of people have told me IRL that they have run into situations where they've gone to certain businesses and they're told there's a coin shortage. So they're not taking cash. You have to use your card. I don't know how the hell you would suddenly have a coin shortage, but whatever. But they will, I think, at some point, they will bring out the angle that COVID is being spread by the handling of money. So in the name of stopping the spread of the COVID, we got to go to the long anticipated cashless society. It's safer, it's for your own good. We're going to protect you from the doom flu. And, hey, you couldn't be robbed because you just got your card. See, it'll be better for everybody. Now, whenever the topic of a cashless society, this topic has floated around for years and years and years. But whenever you bring it up, and I've had this discussion IRL with people, when you bring up the cashless society, the first thing everybody says, literally everybody I've ever talked to about this, the first thing they say is yes, because they want to track everything you do. They want to know what you're buying. They want to know where you're shopping at, when you're shopping, what you're buying, everything about your life. They want to track everything. And it so totally misses the point of where they're going with this. They're already tracking everything you do because look at how much stuff you do online. Shopping, buying. Most people have their locations turned on. Hell, they know everywhere you go. It's on your location history. But trust us, they're not accessing that. Sure, they're not. Unless they want. They may not be going around personally tracking every single person in the country. Sure. But if they want to, if you had somebody that works at Verizon, for instance, and they know you and they're like, I hate that asshole. I wonder what he's been doing. And they could probably get in there and look and see everywhere you've been. Ha ha. Here, you were at this place. Sure, they're not personally going around. They don't need to, but they could if you have all that turned on. Probably if you have it turned off. Honestly, the setting's probably a lie. They'd probably go in there and check anyway. But people miss it because that misses the point. They're already tracking you, but people, that's the first thing they think. They want to go to a cashless society, and people will agree with you. You say, yes, they do. They want to know everything you're doing. They want to know everything you're buying. They want to have... You don't understand. why this is so insidious and why this will be, at some point in time, the next level of control. As somebody who's personally, not just as the internet persona that is Grandpa Lampshade, but as somebody who has, because of that, been personally, as a person, banned for life from PayPal, I see where they're going with this. You see, if they introduce a cashless society, I mean, sure, you could put your money in the bank and you just use your check card. I mean, we all do that. I mean, you go out to eat or something and it's $30 and you look and you got a $20 bill in your pocket. So you whip out your check. You know, you're not going to put it on your credit card and pay interest. You got money in the bank. Nobody takes a check anymore. So you whip out your check card, choop, 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 swoop, the deal comes out of your bank account. Everybody's happy, rock and roll, and you go on. We're all used to that. That is a part of our society. That we've already taken a huge step because we're all conditioned to do that. It's no big deal. It's not a huge deal if they say we're getting rid of cash altogether because of the COVID. You're just going to use your check card everywhere because most people are doing that anyway. Now, they're like, well, that's less intrusive on its face. You know, at first glance, that's less intrusive than the mask thing. I've seen people go in the store and they buy something for $3. Oh, $3. So they have to use the card. It's not an intrusive thing. Like the masks, you're asking people to do something new. You tell people, well, we're getting rid of cash because of the COVID. You're going to use your check card. And most people are going to be like, I do that all the time anyway. I don't even carry cash anymore. That's what most people, probably a lot of people at least, would probably say. But let's think about this for a minute. You get to the position to where we get rid of cash. Don't worry. Use your check card. Your paycheck, if you still have a job. If not, your unemployment is direct deposited into your account. Use your check card. You never have to handle money. It's a great thing. It's a great thing until you're labeled a bad thinker. You've been cited multiple times for refusing to wear the mask. You're a detriment to society. You put other people in danger by your psychopathic, narcissistic tendencies of refusing to wear a mask and refusing to comply. You've been labeled a bad thinker. So don't worry, it's not the government doing it, but the banks themselves have decided to close your accounts. And you can't find a bank now that will let you have an account or much less issue you a check card because you don't have an account anywhere. You found a job, but they only do direct deposit and you don't have a bank account because you've been put on the list of bad thinkers. The conservatives would be all for it because, hey, it's not the government doing it. It's a private business and the bank's private business, my free market. And of course, it'll be happening to you, so the commies will be all about it. They're not going to be standing up for your rights. You see, once you go to the cashless society, it isn't about tracking where you go. They're already doing that anyway. Give a shit about that. But then they will have the power to take your bank accounts, close your bank. If they close your bank accounts, they'll steal your money. We're closing your bank. You go to use your check card. You're a bad thinker, but you know, you think that, hey, everything's cool. You go to use your check card at the store and they're like, sorry, sir, your card's declined. You're like, got money in the bank. What the hell do you mean? I'm buying $7 for the shit. What do you mean? My card's declined. Well, your card's declined. So you go down to your bank here and say, hey, what's up? What's the problem with this? And they're like, oh, well, we've closed your account because you're an evil Nazi that wants to gas 6 trillion Jews or something, according to the commies. So you're a bad thinker. You've been put on the list of people endangering folks because you don't wear a mask and you're a corona denier. We're closing your account. Here, we'll issue you a check for your money. Now get the hell out of here. So you get your check for your balance in your account. And you're thinking, well, you got off lucky. At least piss on that bank. At least they didn't steal your money. You've got a check in your hand for your balance of your account. You're mad, but you go down the road. Piss on them. But you see, all the banks are using the same list. So you go down the road to the next bank and they're like, yeah, sure, we'd love to open an account for you. And you're like, yeah, take my business somewhere else. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. We can't open an account for you. Now you're walking around with a piece of paper that says you have $2,000 and you can't buy a hamburger to eat for lunch. because you're on the list. And you can't use cash, because now we are a cashless society. And before you're going crazy, Lampshade, no way they would go that far. Look at how many people on the internet can't take any kind of credit cards. You know, I mean, if you want to pay your tithes to the Church of Lampshade, you're damn sure not going to do it with a credit card, I can tell you that. But even forgetting this show, or you just look at Gab Schwitz. You know, no payment processing. Everybody that's tried to start like an alternative to like Patreon or any of these other sites, that was the conservatives are trying to build your own platform if you don't like it. Well, multiple people have tried to do that. Only the problem is, guess what? They can't process payments. And so they can't build their own platform. Conservatism is a thing that makes me sick because these quote unquote conservative figureheads always say, don't build your own, the private market. And multiple people go out and they try to do that very thing, only you can't because you can't process any payments. You're out of luck. Can't do any business transactions. You look at this in the context of bans from social media. If you sit there, are you sure yourself? Well, I'm not that far out there. Twitter just banned like 150,000 pro-Trump accounts. Just pro-Trump accounts. They just banned them. They started off with the quote-unquote evil racist Nazi people. And you were warned they were going to get around to calling everybody that. And sure enough, that's what happened. Yeah, don't dare sit here and say, well, if they did that, they wouldn't do that to me. They will do that to you. You just have to make the list. And making that list can be a whole lot easier than you think. You may think, well, Lampshade, you're a public figure. You do this show. Thousands of people listen to it. It's entertaining. It's fun. Who wouldn't know about this great show? So, of course, you're going to be on the list. But I'm just a guy. I'm just a regular guy. I'll fly under the radar. You will not fly under the radar. You will get on the list one way or the other unless you go into full compliance. You do everything they tell you to, then maybe, just maybe, you won't make the list. The whole cashless society thing is insidious, and it should frighten and concern you very much because this is the ultimate amount of power. You think about this whole thing where you can't go into certain stores now unless you wear the mask. You know, well, sure, you can, for the most part, just avoid those stores. You know, because you don't want to submit. You realize this is bullshit. That you realize that their real goal is training you to submit and do everything you're told without question. And so you can go to other stores. You can find some place that's going to look the other way when you walk in without the mask. But when they have the power to shut your bank accounts off, and they will do that. I mean, that's not even just theory because we've seen them do that on the internet. We've seen them do that time and time again. If the credit card processors say, oh, not doing you anymore, then you're not doing it. You're out of luck. If and when they get this power via cashless society, they can literally, you don't have the option of just going to another store that won't make you wear the mask. You don't have the option of skipping eating out and just getting takeout, go through the drive-thru or whatever. You won't have that option anymore because you literally will not be able to buy, sell, get paid. Your employer will be like, well, I've got all this money, but you don't have a bank account. We only pay by direct deposit because we're living in a cashless society now. What can you do? It's not my fault. My hands are tied. You're officially unpersoned, but the government isn't doing it. So it's okay. That level of control. And people think that, you know, it's just going to require a computer chip in your hand and a 666 tattoo on your forehead or some shit. They already have that power. They're just one step away. All they have to do is, if you make the list, just make it to where anybody on the list can't get a bank account any longer. Get cashless society in place, and that is coming sooner rather than later. Boom. Now you literally can't go buy anything, sell anything, work. You can't do anything because it's cashless society now. You can't get a bank account. Surely somebody would pass a law saying that they have to give you a bank account if they did that, really? Who's going to pass that law? The Democrats? Even funnier, the Republicans? We can't have a law like that. That would be intrusive of the private market, my free market principles as a conservative. You'll be out in the cold. And when they have that kind of power, people will comply in whatever way possible to survive. I made the observation the other day, all my life I've heard Christian people say, you know, when they talk about the end times, and they say, well, when they make, when if I'm alive, we get to the point that you have to have the mark of the beast. I'll just have to starve. I just do whatever I got. I'm not going along with it. And those very same people now are like, but I can't go to Walmart if I don't wear the mask. Imagine the compliance level if you can't have a bank account in a cashless society. They literally could make you get a 666 tattoo on your forehead, and they do it. People will do it. People talk hella shit when they're not faced with the situation, you know? You always have those people that are like, oh, I'd like to you tell them a story about something bad that happened to you, you know? Like, say you got robbed. Say something bad happened, you got robbed, and you're like, man, I walked around, these three guys stepped out, and one of them pulled a gun on me. Man, they took my wallet. It's humiliating. They took my wallet, slapped me around in front of my girl. It's horrible. And you're telling your friend that, and your friend is one of those shit talkers. You know, he's like, man, I'd like to see him do that to me. I'd have grabbed that gun from him. I'd have kicked his ass. I'd have shot the other two, one headshot each, and you know, then just walked away and spit on him. You know, yeah, sure you would. People talk hella shit when they're not faced with the situation. I'd like to see him try it. I tell you what, you'll have a revolution here in this country. We're going 1776 if they try to do that. No, you won't. Go do whatever you have to do to comply, to go along. The mask mandates. These are being issued by governors. Haven't been passed by any state legislature. There's no legal grounds for it. As far as I know, if the law, of course, we live in a post-legal society, so this is just a rhetorical argument. But for something to be a law, it has to be voted on by the legislature in the states and then signed by the governor and so on and so forth. But these mask mandates are just edicts being issued by these governors. They don't have any actual legal standing. What law is on the books that says you have to wear a mask and nobody's questioning it? Everybody's going along. And we know there'll be a next step. And I don't know where that falls in, the cashless society. Probably not the next step, but it's a couple down the road. You can see it coming. And this is where it's going to be. This is the level of control they will then have. You think they've got control now. Wait till they have the power to just simply shut your bank account off and starve you out. Well, they won't be putting you in jail. The government's not doing it. Do you still have your freedom of speech? You just have, you're not free of the consequence of not being able to eat. But you can say what you want. You just won't be able to eat or work. Support your family in any way. That's kind of tough. But hey, you're not free of the consequences. Isn't that the snarky reply they always like to give? There will be the Republicans. Well, it's not the government doing it. And by our principles, we don't want to be intruding on the free market. Free market. What a joke. I'm looking at the clock. I really want to get into the Christian-specific segment because we're going to do something kind of deep this week. Something that I think will be interesting for you, whether you're a Christian believer or not. And I want to get into that. And it's going to take some time. So I want to wrap up on that. But the next time you hear somebody throw about the term cashless society, you got to understand, this isn't about getting a microchip in your hand. This isn't about getting a tattoo on your forehead. This isn't about tracking all of your transactions or knowing where you've been. I don't care about that shit. And they already have that information anyway. This is about literally having the power of life and death over you. They may not put you in a gulag. That's too expensive. That's inefficient. They move you to a cashless society. All they have to do is close your accounts, and you're effectively in a gulag. You are literally in, you're walking around in an open air gulag. You may not have a fence around you, but you can't buy food, can't buy gas for your car, you can't go to work. You are officially a non-person. We'll wrap up on that note and get into the Christian specific segment. Those of you that for whatever weirdo reason don't want to stick around for that, thank you for joining us for the regular part of the show. The rest of you, you know what to do. The congregation knows the drill. Get in here, fill those pews. It's time for a Christian specific segment here. The sermon this week in the Church of the Lampshade. I've got to check my coffee here. Let's see. Yeah, probably. Let's look in here. You do the same. I expect all of y'all to check your coffee cups. If this is time to hit that pause button, go get a refill. That's what I'm going to do. And then we'll get cozied in here. I think we're going to have a special treat for you this week in Church of the Lampshade. Something a little different. And something I think is going to make you as a Christian believer. This is going to strengthen your faith in one of those things that I see Christians get stumble on. You know, they get tangled up in the argument. If you're a non-Christian believer and you really are a critical thinker, not just like an atheist spurg that just says there anything that's religion. Ah, religion bad! If you're an actual critical thinker, I think this will be interesting for you as well. So we're going to get into that. Let's settle in here for this week's sermon. Okay, we're all coffeed up. Such a level professionalism of the show. Let's stop everything. Make sure everybody has their coffee or whatever in place. And we're going to have fun with this day. I've kind of touched around on this from time to time. And I'm still really wrapping my mind around some of these concepts myself. But I wanted to share some of this with you because I see this as something that a lot of times I think kind of trips believers up in their faith. And they have a hard time and they struggle with it. And it's once again just a lack of understanding. And I've been hesitant to get into this because, as I've said before, I've alluded to before, it's hard to I've been looking for a way to get into this topic without sounding like I'm fixing to break out my crystals and start totally new age or something, you know, some way out there. And I think we can finally do that. And I think this will be interesting. Like I say, this is something a little different for you. And to do this, we're going to go all the way back to the beginning. We're going to start in the book of Genesis. And I'm not going to read because time constraints and everybody pretty much knows the story. You can sit here and read it out yourself if you want to do that. Everybody knows the creation story. If I asked you how long did it take God to create the world, and you're a Christian believer, just God created the world basically 6 days, 7 days if you count a day of rest from the Lord. Now, we're going to talk about this a little bit because there's something not mentioned here that you should grasp, but most people don't. And before we do this, I'm gonna pose a question to you, and we'll get around to answering that question later on as we go through this. And that question is, how big is the universe? I'm talking everything, the universe that you live in. You think about not just the Earth, not just the Sun, not just our solar system, but the universe. You've watched some sort of space shows, and you know that they'd have to invent for space travel to be feasible. You'd have to have some sort of hyper light drive, warp drive thing or something because of the vast expanse of the universe. You know, exploring new stars, boldly going where no man has gone before. The vast universe. So I pose the question to you. How vast is the universe? Can it be measured? How big is the universe? Now, we're looking at the book of Genesis. And again, we don't have time for me to sit here and read the whole thing. Everybody knows the creation story. So I'm just going to kind of hit a few verses here. You know, we'll start with the very first. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, when they say heaven here, they're not talking about the kingdom of God. Like we'll often say, you know, when I get to heaven. You know, when they talk about God created heaven or the heavens and the earth, they're talking about the sky. They're talking about when you go out in the night sky and you look up and you see all the stars. That's what he is talking about. He created the heavens and the earth. He created the earth. He created the universe. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. So God created the entire universe. so as we know it. Now, we'll skip forward here to verse 16. And this is around the fourth day. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. So he's forming these things that we know as the universe. Now we're going to skip forward once again to verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image. Let us make man in our image. After our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. I find this very interesting. Let us make man in our image. Let us make man in our image. This was very interesting. Okay. Now, let's think about this for a little bit, because where people get stumbled, I've seen people over the years, you know, and you get into creationism and a Christian believer will more likely than not say God created the world in 7 days, and we will have unbelievers and they'll be like, well, I mean, we know we've got all this archaeological evidence. That's ridiculous to claim that God made man in 7 days. And some people will try to counter that with saying, well, I mean, yeah, but there's this whole other meaning. We're going to understand this, I think, in a way where it actually makes sense, because God created something else here. When you read the whole thing, and like I say, I really, if I was doing this right, I would read the whole first chapter of Genesis. That's just too time consuming, and I don't feel like doing it. You can do that on your own and get the point. So, when you get hung up on it, and I will see people hold fast that God created it in 7 days. Okay, well, for starters, they weren't using our calendar here. So, you know, that wouldn't apply. Well, you could say, well, okay, yes, but I mean, we're talking about, you know, a day. I mean, you know, the sun comes up in the day, moon comes up at the night, you know, a revolution of the earth, all of that, except that God didn't create the sun and the moon till somewhere around day four. So he was talking earlier. They talk earlier. Well, then he created this and then he created that. And then, you know, we have other things that he created leading up to even the sun and the moon being formed. So, you know, again, how does it make any sense to say it's in a day? And I see people get hung up on this. And I've been pondering this. And I've kind of realized, you have to read between the lines to understand what else was God creating that isn't specifically mentioned here. If you read the whole first chapter, you read all of this out, God created this, he created this, so on and so forth. But what was God creating if you look at it as a whole? All 7 days, as it were, what was God creating? He was creating a huge over. If you were painting a picture and you'd say, what are you painting? Well, I'm painting a picture of a car. Okay. And you know, you watch it and you say, yeah, hey, I can see that's a car. I can even tell you what kind of car. It's a 59 Buick. I can tell what kind of car that is. It would be like looking at that and not noticing the fact that you're looking at a canvas. The canvas doesn't exist. This is what people miss. The overall thing that God is laying out here that he created, the canvas upon which he is painting. And that is time itself. God was creating time. He was creating. The temporal realm that we exist in, the existence of time itself. And I love the word, by the way, I love that word temporal. You know, you can see root word of temporary there. And that is so true, because everything in this realm is temporary. Everything you are concerned about right now is temporary. Your life is temporary. It'll come to an end. All of your hopes, dreams, all that you have, everything you look around and see that man has created, is built, You know, he's just taken elements that were already there and put them together and combined them to build, say, a house or a car or a machine. He didn't actually create the elements. He just simply put the elements together and gave them form. It's like a cheap mimicry of what God can do. It's kind of a reflection of being created in his image. But it is all temporary. When you build something out of metal, so you build a metal building, from the day you put the metal together, it begins reverting back to its core elements. You may not see it. At first, it's just some chalkiness on the paint. But left to its own, it will begin to corrode. It will begin to rust. And little bits start going back to the base elements that God created. It's temporary. Everything in the temporal realm is temporary. Now, to go on this further, imagine that time existed in solely in the form of, say, an old pocket watch. Think of an old pocket watch, and that is what time is. Because I want to explain why it's laid out, what the point in the scripture of laying it out as days. On the first day, God did this, and then God did that over this layer of time. And to understand why this should make sense to you. Because imagine that time itself exists in the form of a pocket watch, and you were building this pocket watch. You're putting it together, and you know there's certain steps you go through, and you're putting the pocket watch together, and you're putting the springs in there, and the little gears, and the hands on it, and you're very skilled, and you're putting this thing together, and then you snap the last piece in there, and it starts running. Now time exists in your pocket watch. And somebody says, how did you build that? Well, you would have to explain. Well, I put the gears in and, you know, but you see, time didn't exist before you put the pocket watch together. So you're laying it out, you know, in the order in which you did things, is you did things in an orderly fashion. You didn't just snap your fingers and now there's a pocket watch. You put things in place. You put it together as a complicated mechanism. But you couldn't really explain it in the form, in the essence of time, because time didn't exist before you created it. Do you understand what I'm saying? The overall picture of what God has created here in the creation story is time itself. That's why the whole 7-day thing doesn't really make any sense when you try to put it in the box of a day. Well, God created in 24 hours. Well, the clock didn't exist. Well, it's 24 hours is related to a revolution of the earth. No, because the sun didn't exist yet. You see, God created the universe. He created all of those things instead, but he created time. That was the overall thing. Because remember, God exists in the realm of eternity. We exist in the realm of the temporary, in the realm of the temporal. This is a temporary thing. We know that Satan has dominion over this earth right now, and yet he's certainly not happy about it. He's, you know, and why? Because he has been cast into the realm of the temporary for now. Before he's been cast into the realm of the temporary, so he is raging about that. Cast out of the eternal into the temporary, and he's basically raising hell here. Now, again, God exists in the realm of the eternal. Now, we are very limited in what we can understand about eternity. I mean, we just are. We only have so much information to go to. God only reveals so much to us. But we know that God exists in the realm of the eternal, which is a realm that what? Where time doesn't exist. I always find it interesting when you read stories of in the scripture about the prophets, and you know, they would be taken up, you know, in a vision, or they would be taken up to heaven and they would be shown the things that were to come to pass. Have you ever wondered how that would be possible? I mean, I guess for God, you'd say to you just brush it off without thought, but I don't like to brush things off without thinking about them. I think about these things. Okay, so how was this prophet taken up to heaven? And, oh, he was given something to eat so that he could, like, keep his senses about him. I think that's interesting. You know, he starts to be taken into the realm of the eternal to be shown these things, but he had to be given something to eat, which kind of made him sick, but so that he could basically grasp what he could. Now, I've always thought it was interesting that you would read the prophets would be taken, you know, they would see these things. You know, this is going to happen. You think of the book of Revelation in particular, and he sees these things playing out, but they haven't played out yet. So how is he seeing them take place? But if eternity is the absence of time, well, it's easy. And because time doesn't exist in that realm. And I'm not sitting here saying I understand it 100% because obviously I can't. I'm stuck here in the temporal realm with the rest of you. But when they could be temporarily transported to the eternal realm, then it's quite possible because time doesn't exist there. They can literally see it play out. And you imagine somebody trying to explain seeing things of, say, the modern world at a time when none of those things exist. Of course, they would use fantastic terms because they don't even understand what they're looking at half the time. I mean, they understand, well, there's people killing each other and there's all these plagues. I understand plagues. So I understand the earth being cursed. And of course, I believe this is also one of the reasons why God, would show things in representation. Because if they showed them like machinery and said they really couldn't grasp that. So they would get some representation, they would relay that to people in the form of illustrations. I see beasts, I see this, I see that. Because if they were just shown what's happening, they couldn't grasp it. They had to be given a condensed version so they could relay that message onto others. How would you relay the entire history of the modern world that hadn't occurred yet? Well, you wouldn't be able to. You wouldn't have enough lifetime to fill up a book about it and carry all the details. So you would get an illustration of, well, this existed in these kingdoms and so on and so forth. But I'm bear with me because I'm kind of getting off track with that. I didn't even mean to veer off into all of that. The point is, we are in the temporal. God exists in the eternal. So it's absolutely pointless to try to get hung up on, well, did God really create this in one day? Because God was creating time. It's laid out in that order just to understand that this was an orderly thing that was created. It didn't just come into existence all at once. It was done in steps. God had a plan. Now, let's have some fun with this and circle back to the original question I opened up with, which is how big is the universe? You would say it's huge. You couldn't do space travel without some sort of hyperdrive speed, which we don't even know if it could exist, because you're talking about the vast expanse of space. But I would tell you that actually the universe itself is actually very small. We know for a fact that time and distance are intertwined with one another. They are. Time and distance are intertwined, and I'm not sitting here pretending to be a physicist or anything such as that. But even somebody with just your fundamental knowledge, you can grasp the concept that time and distance are intertwined with one another. That's why when you see lights from a star, how do you measure that distance? Well, it's 6 million. 6 million light years away. It's so far away that it takes 6 million years for that light from that distant star to reach Earth for you to see it. And once you've seen it, it doesn't exist. It's traveling in a linear, it's traveling in a line. And when you look up and see the light from that star, it's gone. You're seeing something that was emitted 6 million years ago. So you sit here and say, well, you're just proving the point. The universe is huge. It took 6 million years just for that light to get from here to here. But what if time doesn't exist? What if you start talking about viewing things from the view of the eternal? You take the factor of time out of it. Then the distance doesn't exist because time doesn't exist, you see. The distance exists because, you see why I struggle with this, because I'm sitting here listening to myself and I sound like some new age nut job. But it makes sense if you think about it. The distance doesn't exist if the time doesn't exist. And since we know that God exists in the spiritual realm, in the eternal realm, and only we exist in the temporary realm, the temporal realm, then for God, time doesn't exist, so that distance doesn't exist. So from our perspective in the temporal realm, the universe is this huge, vast thing. But from God's perspective, we're essentially in a box. We might as well be in a box sitting on a table in the middle of a laboratory. We think we live in this great big vast universe, but from God's perspective, we live in a box on a lab table somewhere, for lack of a better illustration. So, how far off is the kingdom of God? way off? Well, they can't be way off because the kingdom of God is in the realm of eternal where time doesn't exist. So he can't be far off. If our universe, as we understand it, was essentially a box, think of it as a glass box, like an aquarium sitting on a table somewhere. And you would be like, the limits of your understanding of the world around you would be limited by those glass walls, wouldn't they? It'd be limited by the walls of the box that you live in. You wouldn't understand anything on the other side of that wall, but it doesn't mean that the things on the other side of that wall don't exist. It just means that you can't grasp them. You can't get to them because there's a barrier between you. The barrier between us and the kingdom of God is time itself. The creation that God has made, the container that we are in, the temporal realm, is the barrier between us and the spiritual realm, the eternal realm. You have to cross that barrier. Now, you will do that through death. And once you die, you leave the temporal realm. That is a prerequisite. And what do you do? Just like we were talking about a building. You start returning to your core elements. You start turning back to dust. You just rot away. It's like a building returns to its fundamental elements. You as a human will return to fundamental elements. You'll go back into the earth. You will leave the temporary realm. You will cross through the barrier. Now, is it possible to cross through the barrier another way? Well, obviously it is. We read in the scripture where angels would appear and, speak to Abraham, for instance. An angel of the Lord would appear and tell somebody something. Well, the barrier works both ways. For those in the eternal realm to come in here, they've got to go through the barrier to get here. So we know the barrier can be traversed. You can get through it. It has happened. Again, we read where prophets will be taken up and shown great things. Well, they're essentially taken through the barrier. Probably not a pleasant experience. It probably screws you all up. I like to think of it, I tend to think of it when you talk about where's the kingdom of God. I really believe the kingdom of God is here. It is basically way closer than you think because distance doesn't exist. So it's essentially on another frequency. And I alluded to this briefly on another show. It's like tuning in a radio. So if you're old enough like me and you used to have one of them old radios, with the dial. In fact, back then, most everything was on the AM band. I'm old enough to remember when FM really, really wasn't a thing. And you had the AM band, and you'd be driving your car down the road and you're trying to tune in that station and you got that dial. That's all you got is a dial. Wasn't no nothing digital. And you can turn it and it's like, that sounds pretty good. But you're thinking, maybe a little more. And you go, it's too far. Then it gets fuzzy again. So you go back. Tune it back in. And they were so bad back in the day that you would be driving down the road and after a while it would start getting fuzzy. You're like, am I getting out of range? But no, you could dial it a little more and it'd come back in. You see, you had to stay tuned in. You had to stay tuned into the tuned into the frequency. I believe that as Christian believers, the more we can get tuned in to what God is doing, to the whole purpose. And this is kind of the point of talking about this, I guess, in a way, is that the more you understand the world around you, the more you understand the creation, the more you understand the concepts of what God has actually made here, not just, oh, he made the earth that I'm walking on. Well, yeah, sure. But he made time itself. This is the overarching picture. When you understand these concepts, you become more in tune with what God is doing. And if you can become more in tune, you're tuning into the frequency, you're not going to pass through the barrier, obviously, until you die, but you can start seeing through it. And you can start hearing, you can start understanding, you can start understanding the things better, the world around you, not just the world inside of the glass box, but what is beyond the box. You can start understanding the eternal. You can start understanding the spiritual. Now, if you're a non-believer, you're listening to this and you're like, man, what kind of gibberish is this? I just believe in science. But, there are theories in science that multiple universes exist. They coexist at the same time. Countless universes. I don't know if it's true or not. But there is a scientific theory that countless universes with different outcomes from the different decisions. Everybody makes a different decision and it goes in a different direction. You have all of these different paths of time that people take, and multiple universes exist and they coexist at the same time. They're just kind of basically out of phase with one another. That's actual scientific theory. But does it sound really that much different than what I've laid out here? If you can have scientific theories that multiple universes exist with multiple outcomes, how is that really that much different than what we're talking about? We're going to wrap up. But again, why is this important? Why is this important? Because understand, one, when you read the creation story, God created time. This is the overall picture. It is the canvas. He painted a picture. The canvas is time. And you can't look at simply what's on the canvas and don't understand that he's actually created the canvas itself. Okay. Time itself was created. That's why it's silly to get hung up on trying to argue on whether or not it was a literal day in which God created something, because that doesn't even apply. It's an argument that has no point, because time itself didn't exist. God was in the process of creating time itself. The creation story is just making you understand that things happened in an orderly, deliberate fashion. But time itself was one of the overarching thing that was being created. It was the box being put together that all this stuff was put in. Also, again, this is important because the more you can understand these things, the more you can get in tune with where God is at, with the spiritual realm. And the more you're going to understand, and this will increase your faith. When you're going through trial and tribulation and trouble in the temporal realm, you know, you keep your perspective that this is temporary. The kingdom of God is nearby. It's just in a different phase. It's out of phase with where you're at. There's a barrier between you, but it's here. Way closer than you think. It's all around you. It's just out of phase with the existence that you're in, because you're in the temporal realm. And when you understand that, the more in tune, the more you can try to keep tweaking that dial and hear the radio station, the more you can understand what God is doing, the big picture, and where you fit into that, your little role in that big picture, what maybe you should be doing, how you can contribute to what God's doing. And then you'll get a greater understanding of what God is, who he is, what he's doing. And the more you will grow spiritually, and the better prepared you're going to be when you make that transition from the temporary to the eternal. Should increase your faith. When things make sense to you, you're going to have more faith in them. If car ran by magic and you drove your car and you didn't understand anything about the concept of internal combustion engines or the components, I mean, you may not understand all the details, but you understand the concepts, and you drive your car on a long road trip in the middle of nowhere and you have some faith in it because you understand the basic concepts of why it's working. You've got more faith. If you didn't understand anything about how a car operates and you went off across the desert by yourself in this thing, you'd be like, man, I could be stranded out here at any minute. I don't even know how this thing runs. You wouldn't have much faith in it, would you? You have faith in your car to get you across no man's land because you understand the basic concepts of how it operates. And the more you understand it, the more you understand if everything's tuned up, if everything's working the way it ought to, and you have more faith in it, and you have more confidence going forward across the vast expanse of desert wasteland that you're driving across because you understand it. And the more you understand what God is doing, the more you understand what God has created, the more you understand these sort of concepts that may seem kind of abstract and out there, the more faith you can have, the more will increase your faith while you are here. The more you will understand God, the more spiritually you will grow, and the better prepared you will be when you transfer from this realm into the next phase. When you get in sync and phase into the eternal realm, you will be better done. It will be a huge shock. You'll understand these things more. You will grow. You will have matured more. And you will be better prepared as you enter into the eternal realm. You can see why I was hesitant to ever get off into this, because it does. I'm saying these things and I realize it probably sounds kind of like New Age gibberish, but it's not. If you really stop and think about these things, it all makes sense. Maybe you sat there and thought, the whole God creating the earth in 7 days thing doesn't make any sense, but it should make sense to you now. He was creating time itself. You can't put it in the box of time because it didn't exist. That's what he was making. As we wrap this up, I hope maybe this helps you to understand a little more about the world around you, about the difference between where you exist and where God exists. The eternal realm is not far away. This universe is not vast. You'd say, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, you know, if somebody would say, well, so you're saying God created a whole universe for man to exist in. And people would say, what an arrogant thing to think that the whole universe is centered around man. But see, I don't find it as an arrogant thing. I find it as a humbling thing that God would create this realm for us to exist in. And look what we've done with it. This is people say, well, that notion that God created the entire universe just for man to exist in is just an arrogant, self-centered notion of man. But I find it to be the opposite. I find it to be a very humbling thing. The notion that God created this existence that we have, the universe as we know it in our limited fashion. And what have we done with it? What have we done to learn about the universe that we exist in, that we know, the temporal realm that we exist in? What have we learned about it? We've mostly spent our energies trying to figure out ways to kill each other more efficiently. How to get more power over one another, how to subdue one another, make other people do what we want them to make us feel powerful, to chase after wealth that means absolutely nothing because it's all temporary. No matter how rich you are, you leave with nothing. We've spent all our time chasing around over this stuff that really, in the context of when you start understanding these things, is really stupid. It's not arrogant to think the universe could be created for man to exist in. It's humbling because we have taken it and just this great opportunity and pissed it away, chasing after stupid things. What's a more efficient way to kill one another? Then we can subdue each other and make each other do what we want them to. And it's all going to pass. In the end, it all means nothing. Because we know in the end, there comes a point where God's just going to disassemble the box. There you go. That at some point in time, God's going to call an end to it and he takes it away. You see, the temporary realm, the temporal realm itself, not just the things within it are temporary, but the temporal realm itself is temporary. At some point in time, God just disassembles the box. It's the last day. He says, okay, it's enough of that. And he takes it back apart. The walls come off. The lid comes off. And all is revealed. You think these things aren't important? Imagine the shock of people that have no grasp of this. If they happen to be around the day that God takes the box apart. They thought they lived in this great vast universe. And then one day, Jesus returns and they take the box apart. They take the lid off. They take the walls off. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, they literally are watching the world as they know it come apart and cease to exist. But as a Christian believer, it shouldn't be a shock for you as you come to understand these things. That's why I thought we'd talk on it a little bit today. And like I say, as I've alluded to several times, I've been very hesitant. And even as we've gone through this, I've been sitting here listening to some of the things I say and think about what that probably sounds like. Somebody hadn't really pondered these things. It kind of sounds out there, but hopefully you'll reflect on them and think about it and really put it together. And it really does make sense. And again, the point is to make you understand a little better that the kingdom of God is not way off. Your faith should be strong because this is all temporary. Everything, good, bad, in between, it's all temporary. This whole thing is just temporary. We get so caught up in little things in our lives and upset over little things in our lives. And we think they're this huge deal. And oh my gosh, people think this about me. Someone said this about me. Somebody slighted me in some way. They don't disrespect me. And these things seem big and they're stupid and they're temporary. Because the whole thing's going to come apart one day. And at some point in time, we we'll return to our base elements, and we will enter into the realm of the eternal. That's what really matters. We'll wrap up on that note. Once again, I hope this made sense to you. I always finish these things out, and I think, does that make any sense? Could I have done it better? Y'all don't know how often I have sat here and finished monologuing for over an hour, which, if you've never done one of these shows, any host will tell you is a difficult thing to do. That's why most people do shows with other people, because it's extremely difficult to monologue for an hour. Y'all don't have any idea how often I sat here and finish an hour and 20 minute monologue, finish a show up, and then afterwards, as I'm writing up the kind of overall summary and all of that, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I should have said this. I forgot to make this point. I could have worded that better. And I have come so close sometimes to starting all over again. Most of the time I don't, because I could just keep doing that over and over and over again, and the show would never get done. On rare occasions, I have actually gone back and redone an entire show. It eats up a whole day when I have to do that. But I always finish hoping that it means something to you. It's one of the things that the listener supporter mailbag is one of my favorite parts of the show, because I get to hear from you, and it's not about, oh, I just like hearing people say pat on the back, they like the show. No, it's just understanding it means so much to know if one person got something out of it, and one person heard it and said, I didn't understand it that way. You made me understand it in a way that's much more clear. It makes me feel like I'm not wasting my time here. It makes me feel like we're doing something real here. And I do believe we are. But it really means a lot to me. And that's the whole point. If what we cover here brings a greater understanding to one person, it's kind of the whole point. Anyway, we got to wrap up on that note. As usual, we run long. I was talking to Sven Longshanks the other day when we were getting ready to do one of our daily nationalist shows on Friday, and he just laughed at it because I told him, I thought, wow, I actually got a show in an hour long, and he just laughed, and he's like, well, I just assume it's an hour and 20 minutes now. I gave up. He just basically gave up on the show fitting in the 1 hour time slot. It's sad. It's sad, but it is true. Anyway, once again, thank you to those financially supporting the show. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. Very much helps me make ends meet. And, good morale booster for the Reverend Lampshade. We're going to wrap up on that note. And, you can also, as I said, alluded to before, you can catch us on the Daily Nationalist on Fridays. Sit down with Sven Longshade. It's a fun show. Try to keep it light here in Clown World. And, otherwise, of course, as you know, you can catch us right here every Tuesday for the Church of Lampshade, right here on Radio Albion. We'll see you next week.